Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pack, and welcome to EWTN Live. We bring you guests from all around the world. Our guest tonight is someone who travels all around the world. He works tirelessly to expand the pro-life movement around the world, truly traveling to hundreds of countries and cities. And he trains local leaders to help families choose life through counseling, health care, and the other resources for expectant mothers in crisis. He is the president of Human Life International, and he is leading that organization to go beyond abortion by bringing all of Christ's teaching on life and family to the world. That includes chastity, a love of marriage, end of life care, and to more truly build a culture of life. So please welcome the president of Human Life International, Father Shannon Bouquet.
Father, great to be with you again.
Father, it's great to have you back. Always enjoy it. And, you know, you've been prowling to and fro on the face of the earth. How many countries have you gone to?
It's getting close to 100 countries.
Yeah.
So it's hard to believe. And it's almost starting my 15th year pretty soon.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing that short period of time to be able to be in so many parts of the world that people sometimes only dream of seeing. So just recently on the island of Borneo. And so people see this in their geography classes, and here I am on that beautiful island.
I was there back in 94, and it's really a cool place. Though I did get nervous when I met some tribal folks that were headhunters. They still had heads hanging up in the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Oh, you're kind of a nice looking fella." I said, pale, sickly looking guy. So I got out of there.
Well, there are some unique places. I mean,
but they are.
Really beautiful places, beautiful people.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about them, I also met folks from the tribes who had become Catholic. And one of the things they loved about being Catholic is that instead of, you know, hunting their enemies and eating them, some of them were cannibals, eating the body of Christ saved them from that spiritual conflict. I mean, that they saw that the evil one led us in this direction of killing other people and living under threats of revenge, and now Christ gives them peace by letting them eat his body and drink his blood.
And liberates them.
It really did. Yeah. So these are cool people. So what, as you've been traveling around, what are you seeing that really has to be addressed? What's coming up to the fore in what you are concerned about?
Sure. Well, one of the things that really is happening on a global scale, and you know, people are seeing more and more in the headlines, more in the news, mm-hmm. really are low birth rates and the consequences of a declining, you know, population. And this is not just something unique to the West now. It's actually happening in pretty much every part of the globe. And it's very concerning because, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. So when these low birth rates become manifested, you know, through the lack of resources, a lack of social resources that we see and are used to in our cultures, i.e., let me use an example that, you know, roads, clean water, you know, just school systems, you know, hospitals and so forth. But if you don't have a population that really is able to support those kinds of structures and systems, you know, everyone really suffers as a result of it. And so this is what I'm seeing, you know, the consequences of across the planet.
I picture a lot of countries as having upside down pyramids.
Correct.
Where the small part of the pyramid are the newborns, and the wider part of the pyramid are the elderly. And that's going on in Japan and Korea. Our country is moving in that direction.
Yeah, just the
and China seems to be moving towards a crisis in this area.
Exactly. I mean, just recently, you know, South Korea's numbers came out. And, you know, it's got one of the lowest birth rates on the planet. And so there are consequences to this, and the government of South Korea is now realizing that the inevitability of what is going to happen as time goes forward. And we're seeing that not only in Russia, we're seeing it in China, we're seeing it in many other parts of the world, that people look at the large population, and yes, they have a very large population, but what they have is an aging population. And as you just gave, with an inverted pyramid, is the very fact that, you know, a healthy culture really has a young population that is, you know, not only feeding in the sense of the workforce, you know, from the taxation and so forth, but really it's young families that support the elderly and care for the elderly, mm-hmm. care for their family members. And so the top of that pyramid is always in the sense of your aging population. But as you just explained, we have an inverted pyramid pretty much across the planet. You know, here in the United States, that, you know, numbers came out from 2024, we're at 1.6. So just to help our audience understand, you know, that when you look at
1.6 what?
So that'd be a total fertility rate. Mm-hmm. So what that means, you know, for those that may not be familiar with the numbers, is that when you look at a base level replacement, so we're looking at a total replacement level, which is about 2.1, which means three people. And that's what keeps a culture stable and constant.
Because you have to plan that some of your children are going to die.
Right.
Diseases, accidents, and stuff. That's just,
right.
That's just a flat reality.
Exactly. And even that number is already low. I mean, I've been advocating along with so many others that even that number needs to change. I mean, many people are saying that it should be at 4, you know, or even close to 5. Because of what you just explained, you know, the things that we cannot anticipate, you know, a child dying early, a couple with infertility, there's so many things that occur. But really underlying all this is just, it's a mindset, you know, Father, that's occurred that I see across our world, where we no longer look at the value of marriage, we no longer see the beauty of marital life, the beauty of family life, the welcoming of children. And we have to remember that some of the cultures and places of our world really invaded that mindset by their own ideologies. You know, when you consider...
Give an example.
Well, China is a good example of this. So most of our audience would be familiar with China's one-child policy, or eventually became a two-child policy and a three. But you have to really go back to Paul Ehrlich, you know, with a population bomb in the 1960s. And mm-hmm. so this really sent, and of course it was used to incentivize depopulation, because there was a genuine fear that we were gonna be overpopulated, that we couldn't sustain the populations, wouldn't be able to feed the population of the world. And of course, none of his predictions have ever come true.
No, he said that by 1985, the population of the world would be so overwhelming right. that there'd be mass starvation.
Exactly. So this is what drove, including the United States, which we can come back to, but in China, it just drove the mindset of depopulating. Mm-hmm. And so what they put into motion was a very intrusive, very aggressive policies that advocated for local people to even report on other people, you know, if they welcomed a second child without permission. And, mm-hmm. you know, just everything got into the mindset, the framework. And it really created a subculture within the culture that really was frightened of having children. And as a result, now we see even today, that same country that was pushing depopulation now realizes the outcome of their policies and now recognizes what will happen by the year 2100, that there's a peak on the horizon in the next, you know, 10 years to 15 years, and we're going to see an aging population continue to grow in size, and because their families are not welcoming children. To the point that they now, when they added a VAT tax, which is a value-added tax, you know, several years ago, they've now added a VAT tax.
Who's they?
So China, sorry.
China, okay.
China.
Yeah.
So they just added a 13% tax on contraception and contraceptives. So this is the very country that was promoting sterilization, abortion, contraception, now has literally flipped its position because of what's happening with depopulation.
I had a guest on a couple of years ago who had gone to China, you know, to observe as a sociologist, mm. and as he observed things, and he wasn't a believer at the time, and he saw women dragged in and had forced cesarean sections, C-sections, right, to abort their baby. They were just forced to do that. Right. And then, of course, the people who volunteered to abort usually aborted girl children, right, because boys were the ones who were expected to take care of their elderly parents.
Care of the family.
So they, you know, would kill the girl babies. And now there's, you know, 50, 60 million men with no woman to marry.
Right.
This is not just people delaying,
right,
you know, childbearing. If you killed off the girl babies, you don't have women to have babies.
Right, right.
That's part of the crisis of China.
Exactly, and so now what we're seeing, not only in China, Russia is another example. We're seeing in other countries in Western Europe, you know, where low birth rates are now reality. You know, and an example, you know, just to kind of, you know, help our listeners, you know, I've been rereading Children of Men, you know, by P.D. James, you know,
yes.
19. And so it's when you think of this 1994, if I remember the year, was, you know, he's kind of looking forward in time where there's 20 years where the world has not been able to conceive a child. There's no child born anywhere across the planet in 20 years. So for whatever reason, you know, there's infertility. And so in the chaos that ensued, the fear, the anxiousness, the violence, the wars that were happening because they were fighting for resources, mm-hmm, and because we didn't have enough children, and so you kind of push it forward in time. And it's interesting that I wrote an article recently on a story out of Italy, and it's a little village, you know, with maybe 20 people. They had a little girl named Laura. She was just born recently. After 30 years of not having any child born in that community. So just the celebration, and you know, the article was about, you know, they're celebrating the birth of a child. But when you read the article and you realize that this is now in Italy where the birth rate is 1.1.
Yes.
So low, such a low birth rate. It's the lowest it's ever been, and that's 2024 numbers. And what you've seen is, again, an aging population, and as a result, the shuttering of schools. You're like this little girl, Laura, there's no other children. She has no other children to play with. There's no one anywhere near her age in any of the neighboring villages. Why? Because they're not welcoming children. So the consequences of that is not just the fact that someone chooses not to welcome a child. It's the consequences of a very selfish mentality that doesn't see the beauty of family life and see the beauty of children and the gift that children are and the hope that children bring and the promise of a future that children show and our investment in our children and believing in tomorrow and very rooted in our own Christian faith and trusting that in God's providence. And so, but it's a story that just, you know, the parents are talking about their fear. You know, where will she go to school? Will there be a school nearby? What resources will she have? You know, the aging population of their community is older. You know, who's going to care for her if something happens to us? And then you just flip that around, and, you know, as an aging parent, you know, that maybe didn't welcome children or maybe had one child, who's going to care for me when I get older? Who's going to provide for me when I'm in need? These are the questions that often are not asked. And it's important as we talk about this is to help people to see the consequences of decisions, but also to really talk about the good and the beauty that God has created, the God-givenness of marriage, the beauty of family life, the wonder of children. And this has been kind of lost to so many countries that even Pope Leo, as Pope Francis before him, was talking about. You know, the welcoming of children, the beauty of family life. And I know we'll talk a little bit about that, but it's concerning to me that it's not just in the Western countries. Mm-hmm. So here, as I mentioned, in the United States, 1.6. So we have a decrease in population. And so as a result, we're watching lower families, you know, welcoming children, the number of children. There are consequences of this that we're now starting to see play out across our country. And it's going to get worse, you know, as time goes forward. And this, you know, Father, is a self-inflicted wound This is not something like the book, you know, The Children of Men, in the sense that something happened. We don't know why we're all of a sudden infertile. The book is kind of written, you know, kind of looking at, you know, what happens, you know, when we don't welcome children. What happens when we lose hope and we let fear and anxiousness or materialism mm-hmm. or things, other things become valuable to us and not seeing the value of the family and the value of children. What are the consequences of that? And so that's what this book really unpacks for us. And it's scary. It's very, very scary to see.
And by the way, if you ever want to see it, they made a movie of it called right. Children of Men. And it's worth it with watching. It was a right. wonderfully done movie. I think you also have to pay attention that to the fact that some governments, like Russia, have tried to motivate people to have kids.
Correct.
They would have one day a year where people would get a day off from work to go home and conceive a child.
Right.
And whatever child was born first, the family would get an automobile. Wow. You know, this that's not enough of a motive. I mean, right. kids cost more than a car.
Well,
there's a real issue
right.
There, and you have to make a commitment that I'm going to love my spouse and be with him or her for the rest of our lives, and I'm going to be faithful to the children we bring together into the world.
Right.
And that's just not the case.
Right. What's happened, you know, many countries like Russia, we're seeing in many parts of Europe, I'm thinking, you know, of Italy itself as another example, where incentivizing, you know, either from tax incentives, giving a car, even to the point of giving property, a farm, a house, really it's had very little impact. And this is what we see in China. It's kind of created, you know, this kind of what we call a death spiral. I mean, so for example, depopulation really creates depopulation. It's a mindset,
yeah.
you know, because you've created a mindset that this is bad, it's not good, and you've incentivized that by, like in China, through its many of its policies and its aggressive policies. And so you created a culture. You created, you know, a framework of which people behave and how they act and how they treat and how they respond, you know, to these givens. And so now you're expecting them all of a sudden, after all these decades of mindset, to put the brakes on and change direction. It's not going to happen. And a policy, a law, and even this VAT tax in China is not going to change it. It really is, it's a mind. It's the heart and mind that needs to change. And what yeah. you just expressed is being able to help people understand the beauty of marriage, the vocation of marriage, the wonder of conjugal love, you know, the love shared between spouses, and the wonder of that love, and, you know, and that love helps to generate in the offer and welcoming of children, and to be able to dedicate oneself solely to the care of one's spouse and the care of one's children, and to see that as something noble and of great value and of great importance. This is, in many places, has been lost. And so it's something that we just need to keep bringing to the forefront.
Well, just as a change that has occurred in my lifetime, from the 1790 census until the 1950 census, mm-hmm. the out-of-wedlock birth rate remained the same. From 1790 to 1950, it was at 4%. Mm-hmm. It went up for the first time in the 1960 census to 5%. And most of that 5%, that new percent, was primarily in the African American community, which had gone up to 16%, while the white population stayed constant. And then it just started climbing up through the 70s till the present, so that today it's 52% of all children nationwide. African Americans still are the highest, with 78%. But Hispanics are in the 60s percentile, and Caucasians are in the 40s, and the lowest are Asians. Right. You know, that's the yes. case. And that also leads to a great deal of instability, right. Right. because kids learn how to live family from being in a family. And they're missing that. And, you know, parents are sometimes coming up with these nonsense ideas. Well, it'll be better for them if I'm happy and go off with some other person.
Right.
No, I don't think you really care about their happiness. Right. I mean, right. thank you for playing, but right. I don't think so. They need stability in order to move forward. And that is about a commitment to love
right.
your spouse, the parent, other parent of your children, and right. to love your children.
Well, you know, Pope Leo XIV has been talking about, you know, the family, you know, since the beginning of, you know, on the first day that he walked out on the loggia. I was in Rome at that moment. And, you know, he's been speaking about the family. So what you're talking about is what he's also been raising is, you know, we've now had generations of people, Father, who have no experience of what you just expressed in the sense of a fidelity of a husband and wife, the beauty of the family that is stable. The grandparents are stable. The great-grandparents were stable. And, you know, they're raised in that beautiful culture, which is what Pope Leo's been talking about. And it's interesting, he's been raising the issue or the example of St. Therese of Lisieux's mom and dad, Louis and Zélie Martin. And he's been talking about them and saying, what kind of culture was created within the Martin home that fostered the lives of saints and blesseds? And so it's a beautiful culture. And the stability of the love of mom and dad, the sacrificial love they had for each other, mm-hmm. the willingness to give themselves to each other in good times and bad, richer and poorer, until death do them part. You know, but so much of now of our world doesn't understand that. They have no experience of it. And so we have generations now where what they know is a single situation. And sometimes by no fault of the other parent. I mean, they could have been abandoned. It could have been a death. So, but here we're talking about those that, you know, that the Holy Father is saying that, but this is all they know. And so when we start talking as we're doing right now, you know, to, yes, our audience would be familiar with the language and that we're raising, but so many people outside of the Catholic fold and outside of the Christian fold, many of them have fallen into this difficulty. And even within these folds, we're seeing the breakdown of the family, divorce rates growing, you know, the single parent homes. So now this is the chance for us to represent. And I really think what Pope Leo is doing is very similar to John Paul in the Gospel of Life, when he talked about that we have to reteach the value of life. We have mm-hmm. to reteach it to a culture that's lost its sense. And interestingly, you know, Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul II, you know, said, as the family goes, so goes society, yes. so goes the world. Yes. So Pope Leo, recently in June of last year, said that the family is the cradle of humanity.
Yes.
So here, it's we know the remedy. The remedy is the proper understanding of the family, but we also have to represent the family and what the family really looks like, you know, to many generations that don't have that experience. And so, and the same thing, you know, when my dad was a younger boy and the larger families that they all experienced was common among families.
Sure.
That was just, it was common. And, you know, and I mean that word in a good way. It was something that was lived by many families. And so, but today, you know, we see a mindset, even outside of an intrusive government like China, or like we see in Russia and other parts of the world, but here in the West, where we have such freedom and the ability to exercise our freedom, no one's telling us here in the United States that you cannot have a child,
right? Right?
But yet we've inflicted, well, probably we have ideologies, absolutely, and agendas, yes. but what we don't have is a government telling me what I can't, giving me vouchers or telling me I can have one child or two children. But yet we've chosen to reject the beauty of children, to reject the beauty of family life, all because of a false narrative that it's harmful to the planet, the carbon footprint, it's all ideology, it's all ideologically driven. Yeah. And also the thing that it's interesting, Father, is the what John Paul would have said many years gone by is the materialistic mentality that's mm-hmm. in the West, that we value things and our comforts yes. over the beauty of others and the welcoming of others. And it doesn't just translate to the welcoming of children, it translates itself to how we treat other people in general. So if we're unwelcoming to the most vulnerable of life and the welcoming of life into our family, it's going to translate itself into other aspects of how I treat other human beings.
I've had couples tell me that, look, I really want some toys. I don't want kids. I want toys. And then, these are people I know for a long time. And I said, you had some very expensive toys. Where are they now? And we sold them. We got bored. I said, yeah, and you still don't have kids. So you have neither the toys nor the kids. Right. And there's an element that while materialism is a strong temptation, I think there's also a lack of faith that God will take care of us. It is a challenge to bring children, a financial challenge, emotional and all. Yeah, all that's real.
That's right.
But I'll never forget that my mother's last Christmas with us, she said, I don't know how we did it, but we always had clothes, we right. always had food, we had a place to stay. Yeah. I still don't know, it just had to be God was there to help us
Absolutely.
Go through this. And, that was her reflection, in her last year. I don't think she's alone. I've heard the same thing from lots of other couples.
Yeah, it's really about, and this is the thing that we try to do in our mission field, is it depends what country we're in. So obviously in parts of the world like in Africa where family life is still welcomed and celebrated and children are seen as a great blessing, you're trying to reaffirm, to encourage, and to support, and to bring opportunity, by encouraging them, but also working with local government, because that's really the key here. It's not that government is the solution, right? It's not the solution. But the role of government is to aid and assist, not to cause harm and not to to literally reverse, and say that this is no longer a good and then work against the family. This is the thing. So I often say that when you look at an iceberg, we only see 10% of it above the water. There's a tremendous bit below. So what you just said is the truth. We all know family life has its challenges. Every family has their difficulties, mm-hmm. and it's about prioritizations. It's about what we value, who we value. Mm-hmm. And with that also, though, you need others. And we really need to recognize the role of government, is to find ways to support the family, to help the family, not so much for dependency, but, incentivizing lower taxes, bringing down the cost of goods, the cost of housing, the various things that affect people's decisions in the welcoming of children, even though that should not be the primary reason, but it does affect how people approach this.
And I would add, for the government support of family, not, punishing the elderly that if they get married, their Social Security gets lost, that it gets reduced.
Right.
That's just plain wrong.
It is.
And it's what gets a lot of older folks to not want to get married. They'd rather just live together. Without benefit of the sacrament
right, right.
and the graces that come with holy marriage, and because they don't want to lose their Social Security.
Exactly.
Government has to be supportive
right.
of family in
and,
this
and,
way.
And as we've talked about, at times on off the camera, just the idea that, government has a role, and one time the state saw the value of the family. And the realization that the core values that come from family life, those not only just gospel values, they're virtues that are taught to our children, how to live within a social structure. We're social beings. We're made for interaction, participation, and community. And all this is learned in the domestic church. It's learned inside the home. Mm-hmm. And this is why the devil has assaulted the family from the beginning, and he's still continuing his efforts today, mm-hmm. you know, and all sowing seeds of confusion and doubt and fear and anxiousness. And so in the sense of all the things that we saw in the children of men are just kind of coming to bear, you know, the unhappiness, the fears, the anxiousness, you know, concern about how am I going to survive? All these things are here. The remedy is the family. It has always been the remedy. It's what God Himself created, you know, and so it is always the path forward. And it's also the healing ointment we need. And so that phrase of John Paul and the phrase of Pope Leo XIV really bespeak of this. But we have to bring this back. And this is the part, you know, that working with priests around the world is that we are the bearers of that good news. And that's so part of our mission really is to support our brothers, to help our brothers to articulate the beauty of our church's teaching. And not to be afraid of proclaiming the gospel of life, not to be afraid of proclaiming the beauty of marriage and the beauty of children. And we have to push against the contraceptive mentality. We have to push against the ideology of the sex revolution and say that there is a good, a God-givenness that we need to proclaim.
This weekend, on Saturday, is the Feast of St. Valentine. Mm-hmm. And what a number of parishes and dioceses are doing is using this as a way to celebrate marriage, mm-hmm. not celebrate going to an expensive dinner and have a date that may not necessarily help your moral life improve. Right. We want to take this and seek the intercession of the Bishop Martyr, St. Valentine, right. to help promote marriage. And in the Maronite Church, this week we have the gospel of the wedding feast of Cana as well. And, you know, to use this gospel, this feast of St. Valentine's, not the way that the world would use.
Right.
They're trying to sell lingerie and all this, and so, you know, some of these companies want to tell them, keep it a secret. I just want to know. And so we instead want to have this love of couples for each other centered on Jesus Christ and His grace and love of their children. This is key. We have to take a break. If you want to find out more about Father Shannon's work, you can go to the Human Life International website, which is hli.org, hli.org, and find out more about all sorts of stuff that they're doing. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We want to get your questions and calls and your comments, so please stay with us. Welcome back. We've been discussing this issue of global depopulation, and you can uncover the Global Depopulation Project with a free ebook from Human Life International. It's called The Kissinger Report, Blueprint for Global Depopulation. You can sign up for that and many other things for free. It's a good price. Just go to hli.org/free-ebooks, hli.org/free-ebooks. e-books. A lot of folks don't realize that Henry Kissinger, who was our Secretary of State under President Nixon, was very committed to depopulation. Exactly. He wanted the population of the world to be 50 million.
Something, small number of that, yes.
Yeah, that's barely the population of Texas or California.
Yeah, most people are unfamiliar with the Kissinger Report, and really it's what we talked about a little earlier. When you look at Paul Ehrlich and you look at that population bomb, so the response of the United States under the Kissinger era was, how do we protect national security? So they used depopulation as in its promotion under the guise of national security. And so looking at various nations that we needed, where resources we could find to maintain our way of life, to maintain our security, end quote. Mm-hmm. And that is, we have to keep their population down so we have access to those resources. The sad thing, Father, is that this policy is still at work. And you know, and it plays out in organizations or work like of USAID that we are, most of our audience will be familiar with, and why defunding some
the
of those
USAID
aspects.
Is a federal government, operation, right?
Correct.
And they give aid from the United States to other countries,
right? From the
on the condition that you include training for abortion and birth control.
Right. So it's happened like the United Nations Population Fund that, you know, that the Trump administration has recently defunded is an example of one of those groups that has been given funding through the United Nations, which we are funding through our tax money and through various other programs that goes around the world and promotes basically what's called reproductive health. And so reproductive health, i.e. means contraception, sterilization, abortion. And of recent, it also included the issue of gender-altering surgeries. So this is what sadly was being utilized in these funding around the world, and I see with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. So today, when you look at this, it all goes back to the Kissinger Report and the way that in which these organizations or these various non-governmental organizations are being used. And the amount of money, the millions and millions of dollars that are being spread around the world to depopulate. And what ultimately has that resulted in? It hasn't resulted in anything other than making, you know, poorer nations lower in population and still poor, still dependent. Mm-hmm. It has done nothing to change infrastructure. Basically, the iceberg under the water has done nothing to get to the systemic issues that are causes for objective poverty. And so it's important for people to read, to understand, well, where did this begin? How did it begin? For us, really, the Kissinger Report, and I've always said that, you know, I would love to be able to sit down with any administration and really break this down, because I really don't think that many in government realize what we are doing. Now, as I say that, I also see the good that our country does. Our country does a tremendous amount of good around the world. Mm-hmm. And not every funding, not every program is tainted, you know, by any means. We do a lot of charity around the world. We are on the ground many times. The first disaster that's happening, there's no tentacles tied to it. There's a lot of good that's being done. However, there is also a lot of bad being done, and it's important for us to know that.
Yeah, basically, not with disaster relief,
right,
but with a lot of other programs, we'll give you money if you are willing to kill your children.
Right.
That's an evil policy, and I stated it starkly, but it's a stark reality.
That's right.
We have a caller. Hello, Anastasia?
Yes, Father.
Yeah, what can we do for you today?
Well, there's a lot that could be said. This is a wonderful program, and it's really important. But I'd like to focus a comment on, over the years, I've heard a lot of large families that have been interviewed and that have talked about the grief they get and criticisms they get from people for having so many children.
Yep.
And I've often thought that a wonderful reply would be, well, we're replenishing the population in America. We're paying into your Social Security. We're making up for all the little children that other people are not having. I think that big families really need to be recognized and honored. We only have four children, but a shout out to my four kids is they have been a real blessing. My husband and I, we're in our 70s, and we're kind of homebound right now because of my husband's illness. They have been a wonderful, wonderful comfort and support group for us. So that's another good reason to have children. So that's what I have to say.
Well, you know, that's right. Again, that was another thing my mom said. It said, when I was young, I was being selfish. I should have had more of you kids. Mm-hmm. And I didn't because I was too self-centered back then. That was glad to hear that we were a good result. I wasn't always sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the real thing is talking about the beauty of what a family. And, you know, and so it's not so much the focus on a number as much as it is focusing on being open and being open to God's blessings and open to the gift of life and welcoming life and celebrating that life. But also for us to really recognize, you know, the benefit of family life, you know, the benefits that parents receive from the beauty of their children, the beauty that children receive from their siblings and from each other, the community that really is the domestic church. I mean, this is where, again, these core values are learned of kindness and mercy and compassion. As Pope Benedict would often say, or John Paul, it's the first hospital, it's the first government, it's the first military, if you will. Everything is in that home, which is what God created. And so a couple that's open to God's blessings, receiving the blessings of God, you know, whether that be the blessings of one, two, three, or whatever the number may be, if they have remained open to God's blessing, then God will also assist them. But also the benefit they bring to the society, to the community, you know, because it's like throwing a rock in a pool. It makes a ripple. Yeah. So the domestic church moves into the larger church. And so we all benefit, you know, from what John Paul said, as the family goes, so goes society. So if we look at the woes of our culture, we have to turn it back and say, well, look at the woes of the family. But if we heal the family and we start reintroducing the beauty of the family and supporting the family and working for the good and well-being of the family, that's not only within the church, you know, that's within society itself to advocate for the good and to support that good. And for us to work at it economically, socially, culturally, then we all benefit from it. All of us benefit from it. Yeah. And, you know, so if we look at today with the issues of euthanasia and assisted suicide on the rise, why do people feel that this is the only outcome? You know, Anastasia just mentioned that she and her husband are in a position now of need, and the blessings that their children and their grandchildren and family bring to them in their time of need. Mm-hmm. Well, that's learned from Anastasia and her husband. They learned that gift. And this is sadly, again, something lost in the culture where people feel their burden, they're unwanted, you know, very much like we see at the beginning of life. We see at the end of life. It's the same mentality, fear, anxiousness, unwanted, you know. And so it drives people toward, in that fear, to making decisions that don't promote life.
Yeah.
So to overturn that, we have to realize where the oil of ointment of healing comes from. Yeah. It's in the home. It's in the home. And we learn it, for example, if we look at the Martin family. So Louise worked outside the home, you know, for several years, in the sense of out of the country, I should say, to support his family. You know, many family members make sacrifices for the good of their family.
Yep.
And they choose a value of great importance, and they do what they can to make that value known. And so this is also what we need to do. We have today where our families, both parents are being forced to work today because of the inflation and cost that we see. So the stability of the home, so now what's happening is daycare centers are raising their children. You know, others are raising their children. So those are the values those children are learning. Mm-hmm. They're not being learned from their mom and their dad as the primary educators and formers of their children's mind and heart. So this is another thing we need to talk about. And so it's really a challenge today, and that's why I think what's hard is for people to see that they know there's a problem, they know that this is not the way it's not working, but they're afraid of what the remedy would look like because it would require sacrifice, it would require a change of focus, it would require a change of direction.
And that is where God being the center of a family is essential. His sacrificial love for us on the cross
is
the model for family, and the parents who live out that sacrifice show the children that example so that they also become willing to sacrifice for others.
That's right.
We have a question from our studio audience. Sir, where are you from?
My name is Ruggiero from Bronx, New York, originally. And I'm here today, and thank you for the program. The question I have to propose is, can you talk about the agricultural era where families had multiple children and going into the information age and how that caused also that disruption? Now, I am very blessed to have four children, so I'm contributing to the averages in the United States. But I see there's a big disconnect where need to understand also where we had our own farming. We had our own, home building, fresh fruits and vegetables that was even healthier, and we were healthier. And now, as you mentioned, that we have both parents now working and having daycare centers, more expenses, cell phones, et cetera, et cetera. Can you dive in deep into that, please?
Yeah, there's no doubt we've seen culturally and socially changes in structures. And so, from going from a more agricultural society, in a sense, I came up in South Louisiana. Both of my grandfathers and grandmothers welcomed large families, and we had large farms. And so a lot of our own produce was what we ate, is what we consumed. We grew our own cattle, chickens, pigs, and so forth. So these were things that really helped support the family and be able to provide for the family. Mm-hmm. But both of my grandfathers also had other jobs. They worked, full-time jobs and earned income to support their family. But as, society has moved away from that way of life and become more drawn toward, the kind of almost, instead of having urban life, in suburban life, we now have an urban life, mm-hmm. Mentality, just the busyness and kind of surrounding ourselves, with more of the conveniences and more of the technologies and reliance upon, that environment. It's changed the way we approach. An example of this would be in many of the cities, housing. I mean, how do you raise a large family in an apartment that barely can handle two people? How do you, in some countries, they actually purposely create the housing so that you don't have large families. So again, we're back to the state imposing an ideology and forcing people into the cities because that's where the work is. And so there's no work out in the urban parts and suburban areas. So they're drawing people into the metro areas, pushing them into a structured way of life and forcing things to be the cost of living to go up, the cost of housing. So now one household salary can't afford it. So now we need two, still can't afford it. And so you see how it begins to affect the mindset and the culture. It's created another culture.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that you couldn't welcome large families in cities. I'm not saying that at all. There are many of areas around our country and around the world where many people welcome large families within the city life. But again, those structures were different then. You had communities, you had your family lived around you, everyone was kind of supporting you, you had aunts, uncles, you had infrastructures, family, but that now people are more mobile. They're on the move. Kids don't live near their parents anymore. They've moved out of the area. So a lot of those things sociologically have changed in the structures. So now it's important for us to reintroduce, which really comes to, in many ways, to our parish priest, to our religious men and women, to our lay leaders in the work of evangelization and catechesis, is we have to have the courage to push against the wave of today. And we have to, what Pope Leo has been saying, we have to reintroduce, we have to repropose a value that has been lost to many. And for the moment, it's going to seem absurd. It's going to seem, well, who are you? You're single. You're not even married. You're celibate. What mm-hmm. do you know about family life? We've got to fight against that mindset and stand on the principles that we know that have worked in every century and throughout the millennia that are the truth yesterday and the truth today and the truth will be tomorrow. What I find today, and that's what makes our mission so important as well, is empowering and emboldening our priests to be able to preach, to teach, to proclaim, and whether they be in a developing part of the world or whether they be in the Western countries. But we need to reintroduce the language, Father. We need to not be afraid of doing what Paul VI did with Humanae Vitae, stand on the truth, on the beauty of marriage and conjugal love and the beauty of family. And if we just take the courage to welcome this God-givenness that God Himself has created, we would see goodness, and we would see beauty, and we would re-experience something that is no longer seen from a kind of a nostalgia, looking at the old movies and seeing, we realize there's something beautiful here that we've been afraid of. Mm-hmm. Just like in, you know, the children of men, the idea is that, you know, it was not, it's something that happened to them in the book I'm talking about, mm-hmm. but the reality, look what happened as a consequence. Well, yeah. what we're seeing in China, what we're seeing in Russia, what we're seeing in South Korea, what we're seeing in Japan, what we're seeing now globally can be undone. It can be healed.
Yeah.
It can be healed.
And this is something that I think also we priests at the parish level can help the other parishioners realize we're all in this. And there's certain ways in which the parishioners can act as substitute aunts, uncles, and grandparents to help support those families.
Right.
And that would be a positive thing as well. Mm-hmm. We have another caller on I'd like to get to. Steve, what can we do for you?
Yes, Father Paco, I have a question that says, God wants sex and marriage to produce children, but that is God's plan. Outside of that, abortion arises, violating God's purpose. How can people see God's plan in their lives and realize that abortion is murder?
So again, it's the how do we... So what we have today is really a breakdown and understanding of the beauty of what marriage is and what conjugal love
right.
really is.
Right.
And so that's the starting point. It's the reintroducing of a great good. And the church advocates for the good. This is what we're advocating for. But, you know, let's go back again to Humanae Vitae. You know, this is what Paul VI was defending. He was defending conjugal love. He was defending the ends of marriage. And so... But what we found in, you know, as a consequence of the sexual revolution and people rejecting authority, and they were rejecting this perennial good. And so it has consequences when we reject that good. We falsify the beauty of marriage when we contracept. We falsify the good of conjugal love when we introduce something that's not part of conjugal love and it's outside of conjugal love. And it denies the beauty of conjugal love. And so this is that contraceptive mentality that now leads to the abortion mentality. Because if I don't want a life in my marriage and I'm not open to the gift of life and I want to stifle the gift of human life, the natural end of conjugal love, you know, is the possibility and the openness of life, then inevitably it's going to lead me to abortion. In a sense, I didn't want it here. Why would I want that life now? So
right.
this is the challenge. So so that's why I have been saying for many, many years now, and especially serving HLI for nearly 15, we will never end the abortion mindedness until we eradicate the contraceptive mentality.
Yeah. We have, I thought we had another call. There was someone who was trying to call in, but we're running low on time, and she was just Dolores from Ontario. She wanted to ask, could Pope Leo XIV call for another year of the family?
And of course,
this would be something where for the church to focus
right.
on family yet again in this time of family. And population.
And this is what I'm hoping will happen, because we're really, and it has to be not only from the Holy Father calling for a great year in celebration of the family, right? But also that needs to transmit itself into the diocesan life around the world, which needs to move down into the parish level. And it can't be done superficially. It
right.
really has to be an intent, a full intent, and to celebrate. And it's going to take, you know, the courage, you know, to break the models, if you will, that we've been kind of using, you know, kind of just kind of stop-gapping. We've been putting our fingers in the dike.
Right.
You know, that's got to change. You know,
yeah.
we really need to be intentional. And you said it, Father, so beautifully. On the parish level, how can we support our families? You know, what does that look like? And each community is different. So you have to find out what works in that community.
Exactly.
On the diocesan level, it can't just be preach on this weekend. It can't be just in the parish bulletin. It has to be a real, like a pastoral that moves into catechesis, moves into evangelization, moves into the parish structures. In other words, it has to, at every level, be at every level.
Exactly.
So I hope the Holy Father, I got a feeling he is moving in that direction.
Yeah, I think as he settles in, he will. We want to, again, encourage you to help get that overall vision and use some of the resources at Human Life International. Go to their website, hli.org, and you'll find lots of resources as well as awareness of all the good things that they're doing. And again, that document by Kissinger on Uncover the Global Depopulation. We've run out of time.
Always.
Please join me in blessing our audience. May Almighty God bless you and keep you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. And we can bring you Father Shannon and all the other guests and all the other programs we do promoting family life, love our children, education, and the faith. We can do that only because this network is brought to you by you. So please remember to keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill. And if you do that, we'll be able to pay all of our bills too. God bless you all for your support, and thank you.